Everyone suffers. In times of war or calamity or natural disasters, everyone suffers together. Yet no matter how far the dark ripples of pain might spread, suffering is always individual. We feel it inside as a wound to ourselves. Because it is invisible, we can't show this wound to anyone else. We can only live through the terrible experience of grief and depression, the sense of loss that overwhelms us so much that nothing else matters. Suffering can be defined as the pain that makes life seem meaningless. Animals suffer, of course, and often deeply. Some are capable of mourning for their kind if one dies. Humans, however, are subject to complex inner pain that includes fear, guilt, shame, grief, rage, and hopelessness. It was an illusion to think that our society was immune to such suffering. That illusion abruptly burst on September 11th. On that day, I was traveling cross-country when the airports were all shut down, forcing me to hire a rental car and to drive from city to city, mostly in the Midwest between Detroit and Denver. As soon as I arrived anywhere, I met beseeching people who begged me to help them with their hurt and distress. In the first aftermath of a tragedy, victims experience numbness and shock. I was traveling during those first moments when shock was just giving way to tears, one of the very first stages of grief, so all anyone could do was to try to feel safe again on the most basic level. They might have read one of my books, heard a tape, or been to a workshop sometime in the past, and there I was, someone who might be able to help. Yet, I was in the same state they were in. All I could do was reflect on my own experiences with grief. Hold each other, I offered. Don't be afraid to ask for contact. Reach out and tell your loved ones that you do love them. Don't let it be taken for granted. Feel your fear. Be with it and allow it to be released naturally. Pray. Grieve with others if you can, alone if you must. These are simple, basic remedies for dealing with shock. But numbness and tears lead to the second stage in which powerful emotions rise to the surface, often after being buried for years or decades. All around me, I felt rage and sorrow starting to erupt. People began to say that they were deeply afraid in a way they had never experienced before. Now the most common incidents, the slam of a door, a car backfiring, a surprise tap on the shoulder, could trigger panic. In the ensuing days, this anxiety began to spread like a contagion. The third stage of suffering comes when you feel that you must take action, either to heal or to strike out against the attacker or to lend a hand to other victims. Many possibilities unfold. Some choices keep suffering going, others alleviated. Before talking about the deep roots of suffering, we should pause over the choices that everyone can make when stage 3 begins. Hold each other in loving awareness. Speak gently. Resist viewing negative images over and over. Walk away when a conversation contains negativity. Keep your life as structured as possible. This is especially true when dealing with children in the aftermath of tragedy. Try not to be alone. Eat meals as a family. Allow friends to offer consolation, even when being around others may be painful. Forgive yourself when you feel like a victim, but take steps to grow out of victim thinking. Allow for someone else's point of view. It is difficult to express inner pain, and we all do it imperfectly. What may seem like anger and frustration from others is often the best they can do. Once the acute stages of grief have passed, your sense of suffering may be subtle, like a grey fog rather than a sharp physical wound. In this case, it is important to do more than strive to regain a sense of normalcy. The absence of acute suffering means that you are ready to start fulfilling your most fundamental needs once more. Such as the need for safety, the need to belong, the need to be acknowledged by others, the need to matter, the need to express yourself freely, the need for love.